Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers.
Hi, I'm Justin Blake, Executive Director of the Edelman Trust Institute. We recently launched Edelman's latest Trust Barometer special report, Trust and Climate Change. Among our key findings, this report showed that people are increasingly worried about climate change, but they face barriers in taking meaningful steps to combat it. To dive deeper into these findings, I'm joined by Professor Tansi Whalen. She is the director of NYU Stern Center for Sustainable Business and a clinical professor of business and society. She has more than 25 years of experience working with business to tackle environmental and sustainability issues. Professor Whalen, welcome to Trustmakers.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here with you.
So I'd love to start with a little about you. You've been involved in this area for more than 25 years. How did you originally get involved in the intersection of business and sustainability?
Well, I started first with a father who worked at the Museum of Natural History when I was a kid. And so I got to like see the taxidermy and, you know, hide in the stairways where there was snakes and, you know, all kinds of fun stuff. And my mom worked for the Vera Institute for Criminal Justice Reform. So I saw the social side from her and the environmental side from my dad. We have a farm up in Vermont. So even though I grew up in New York City, we spent a lot of time hiking and fishing and, you know, look, you know, rural agriculture and stuff like that. So all of that. And then another thing that was really important was my grandparents, my mother's parents lived in Mexico City. And so when I was a kid, we spent time there and I just got fascinated with both the sort of extremes of poverty and wealth, but also kind of what types of challenges and opportunities we see in developing countries. And all of that led to me, you know, getting very interested in sustainability. And I went and worked for World Wildlife Fund for a while. Then I went to Sweden and was the editor of an international environmental journal that the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences put out. Then I went to Costa Rica, where I worked as a journalist on environment and development issues. So you've had these great experiences of really seeing at the field level, you know, how sustainable development is done or how it's not done well, right? So, and then brought that to Rainforest Alliance, which I ran for 15 years, and now to Stern, which I launched the Center for Sustainable Business here at Stern about 7 years ago.
So tell us about the center that you launched 7 years ago.
So the Center for Sustainable Business's focus is on helping current and future business leaders really embed sustainability core to their business strategy. So not treat it as a CSR, corporate social responsibility exercise off to the side, but something that really changes how you do your business in a way that will drive more value for all stakeholders, as well as shareholders. And what we're seeing in our research and our work, and what I saw at the field level and the work that I did at Rainforest Alliance with thousands of businesses across the globe, is that actually sustainability is driving better performance. It's driving innovation. It's driving risk mitigation. It's driving consumer engagement, employee engagement and retention, right? Supplier resiliency. All kinds of things, right? That it's really basically that next wave of total quality management. And so our focus at the center is to both educate students, undergraduates, executives, graduates, as well as do practical research that can actually be used in a hands-on way by both corporates and investment professionals who want to really move forward the sustainability agenda.
Yeah, can you talk to us a bit more about some of the research you're doing? I mean, I think a lot of our listeners are very focused on solutions. And I think learning a little bit more about some of what you're doing at the center would be really helpful to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. So one area that we're focused on is what we call the return on sustainability investment, or ROSI. Think of ROSI the Riveter, right? So ROSI has identified, we've identified 9 mediating factors that drive better financial performance when you embed sustainability, like, as I mentioned, innovation or operational efficiency, et cetera. So to give you an example, sustainability can drive massive operational efficiencies, cost reductions, right? If you think about it, when you're creating waste, you're buying more than you need to pay to dispose of what's left over, right? So when we looked at this for automotive companies, we found that for one company, Their waste management strategy was delivering $235 million annually of EBIT net to them as a result of doing things like recycling paint and solvents, where they no longer had to buy the virgin stuff. They no longer had the waste disposal costs. They were actually had a little bit left over to sell. Or we looked at a pulp and paper company in the southeast of the United States, where the mill managers were like, we don't pay for water and there's plenty of water here. So why should we be even thinking about water, even though that's a material issue for pulp and paper because they use so much of it. So the CSO said, you know what, let's take a look at this. And what he found out is that all that free water needed to be moved around, which means energy, needed to be heated and cooled, which means energy, and needed to be disposed of, which means waste disposal costs. All that free water was costing them $1.5 million per mill per year, right? So we're doing a lot of research around those types of things. We're also doing research where we're actually partnering with Edelman on some interesting research around consumer purchasing. So we do our own research with IRI, looking at consumer purchasing of sustainably marketed products, where we found that they are driving 32% of the growth in the United States of CPG and at a 28% premium. One out of every two new products purchased in CPG last year in the United States had some type of sustainability attribute. So we're seeing like real growth, and this is going on. I think this is going to continue even in an inflationary period. And with Edelman, we're beginning to work on messaging, and we're testing some ideas around messaging that we're excited about too.
What are some of the things that you're exploring, or what are you interested in terms of messaging on this topic?
Yeah, so we're interested in what kind of claims work best for people, right? So clearly, you want your product to work. You want it to taste good or clean your house well or whatever its particular core attributes are. And one of the hangovers we have around sustainable products is that back in the 70s and 80s, a lot of them didn't actually function that well, right? They didn't taste that good. They were really expensive. They didn't work. So they kind of had an image of like a hippie granola kind of non-functioning product. That has actually changed dramatically. In many cases, we're seeing that sustainability is actually driving improved quality. But we need to kind of shift people's thinking and have them understand that sustainability actually can be a contributor to the core attributes of the product and help it be a better product. So what kinds of claims like do people respond to best? Do they respond to claims that are related to health, but not only their health probably first, but also planetary or worker health? Do they respond to no chemical claims? Do they respond to animal welfare claims? Do they, you know, so we're looking at those kinds of ideas to understand in different categories what works.
And as you do that, how are you taking into account the risk of greenwashing or misleading type of claims that companies or brands might make?
Yeah, and this is a huge issue. And in the research that you all did for the Climate Trust Barometer, one of the things that we saw is that people don't trust corporate claims, which is why we see a lot of traction for products that have third-party claims like Rainforest Alliance Certified, where I used to work, or organic or other types, or Energy Star, et cetera, right? So I do think there's a real challenge, even when you have companies that are doing well, for it to be their own claims. I think finding partnerships with external stakeholders, NGOs and others, or governments or systems will help with that credibility. So I think that that's a key issue around that trust issue.
So you mentioned the climate report that we just put out on trust. And as most people know, we look at trust across sectors, business, government, NGOs, and media. And one of the things that we found that was really interesting is in almost all of Edelman's trust reports over the last several years, it showed that business is the most trusted institution of those four. However, when it comes to climate, business is third after government and NGOs. What's your take on that finding?
Yeah, I think it's a fair, unfortunately, a fair assessment by consumers, by citizens. I think there's been a fair amount of overclaims by companies. Some of that is intentional. Some of it is not. Some of it is brave, bold marketing language that sounds good, but actually overstates. And there's also a lack of regulatory focus on this. So I think companies push the envelope in terms of what they can say. Yeah, I remember when I was running Rainforest Alliance, we worked with a company and we were working with them on their coffee. And so they were sourcing sustainable coffee, Rainforest Alliance certified coffee, but they wanted to talk about sustainable cappuccinos, but the milk, the sugar, the cinnamon, the cup, none of that was sustainable. But, you know, and you can understand in terms of messaging, it's like much more fun to say you get a sustainable cappuccino than the coffee in your cup of cappuccino, right? But that's where you start to get into those trust issues. So I think one of the areas that, you know, we see is the big brands, as they see the business opportunity, the market opportunity here, they try to then kind of apply everything that they do in their conventional brands to the sustainable brands, and that can destroy the brand and destroy trust. So they need to maintain that kind of sustainability focus to remain credible.
Over the last several years, you talk about bold marketing claims. You talk about businesses that kind of dilute the original value of truly sustainable products. Do you feel like business is improving, going backwards, about the same? Like, what are just some of the signals that you're seeing around business and sustainability?
Yeah, well, so I talked about the bad and the ugly, right? But there is also the wonderful and the good in terms of business leadership, right? So there are many companies that are doing really robust embedded sustainability approaches where they are transforming their supply chains, they're transforming their manufacturing, they are figuring out new products to, you know, products and services to develop, right? So we see this in everything from in apparel, all the platforms that have been set up to encourage circularity, return and reuse of products. We see it in, you know, companies like Panera that's all focused on sustainable food sourcing and having carbon footprinting, carbon labeling of their food products so people can understand where the lower carbon footprint is in a fun, interesting way, you know, but real, like they partnered with World Resources Institute to do that, right? So they had third-party engagement around it. Unilever, of course, is a brand that, you know, through their broader purpose of making sustainable living commonplace has really, you know, made everything from, you know, committing to a living wage for their suppliers to phasing out plastic packaging to 100% sustainable sourcing that they're aiming towards, you know, really robust strategies. So I want to make sure not just to say, you know, like I think unfortunately, while consumers are right that there absolutely have been problematic claims, they're wrong to believe that that is true across most corporates. And in fact, quite a few corporates are doing a lot of really good work in this space.
Yeah. Well, you know what strikes me though, is I almost feel like the positive examples you gave go back to the mission of your center and your work, which is about embedding it in your business. And I feel like some of your critique is actually very much around kind of the marketing and, if you will, packaging of some of these products. And a lot of the listeners on our podcast are marketers. So do you have advice for the marketers listening?
Yes. And actually on both sides of the coin, because so you're absolutely right. I see that overclaims marketing stuff. That's a problem. I actually see some companies that are doing an amazing job on the sustainability procurement and manufacturing side that aren't actually talking about it, which I also think is a problem, right? So how do we think about this from a marketing perspective? So first of all, building that trust, actually ensuring that there's a robust program within the company that you can speak to. Obviously, you're going to speak to it in marketing language. You're not going to talk about it in exhaustive detail with all the traceability steps and all the third-party certifications, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's understandable. You need to have that, though, on your website. You need to have where the activists can find all that data that gives the backup for whatever it is you're going to say on PAC. That's really critical. And working closely with your with procurement, with manufacturing, again, depending on the business, right? And going and seeing it for yourself so you understand what is actually happening and able to articulate it in an exciting way, but in a way that doesn't overclaim.
Yeah.
And then I would say if you're on the other side where you have like, you know, the procurement folks and everybody nervous about communicating, because I hear this too, you know, well, not everything we're doing is sustainable. So if we communicate about this, then we'll be attacked on everything else. And actually, I have never, as long as you're not trying to imply that everything that you're doing is perfect because you're doing this thing, right? That's important not to do that. But I have never seen a company attack for saying, we're on a journey. And let me tell you some of the exciting things that we're doing now, we have more to do, but these are the things that we're excited about. And we want your engagement to help us move forward, right?
With yeah.
It. Yeah.
I love that you said that, because in our client work, I find that the thing that most often freezes executives and others at a corporation is when they feel like they don't have it perfect or they've only solved part of the problem. It'll often lead to not communicating at all. So I love this kind of advice of like, we're on a journey. Here's what we're doing well. Here's what we are still improving on. I think that's really great advice overall. You talked a little bit about kind of the information that brands and companies are providing. And I'd love to pivot off of one of our findings. So overall, we found that while people fear the impacts of climate change, they haven't made the changes necessary to live a climate-friendly lifestyle. And that's by their own admission as well. So part of what we want to look at is like what leads to behavior change and what's the role of information in terms of behavior change. So one stat, for example, is that 64% say products should have a label or QR code that allows people to easily see its environmental impact. And as you noted before, as rated by an independent agency. So maybe can you talk about that finding, talk about the role of information?
Absolutely. And I can tell you that consumers are actually voting with their wallets on that one. So for that consumer research that we do on, this is CPG solely, but you know, ag, food, personal care, and household care, we saw that in 2021, $3.4 billion of carbon label product was sold, and up from $1.3 billion in 2020, up from next to zero in 2019. So there's a clear and significant trajectory of consumers looking for data about this. That said, carbon labeling is very confusing. There's a lot of room for greenwashing, a lot of room for sort of apples against oranges, right? And so being careful about what you say, and particularly as I think the government is paying more attention to these claims, and this is an area they will look at, you know, how to make sure that, again, you're associating it with a third party that actually assesses your carbon performance. And then we need to figure out how to benchmark it so people know what it means, right? Because it's very hard to kind of understand what context that's in. But I do think that there's really significant opportunity for labeling. You know, Amazon now has their climate friendly mark, which includes a number of third party certifications in it, like Rainforest Alliance, where they're helping, their goal is to help there are customers find more low carbon products. We're seeing this. Unilever has made a commitment around carbon labeling all their products over, you know, period of time. We're seeing other companies like Allbirds has got a very cool kind of transparency reporting on the carbon embedded in each of their kind of components and how they're reducing them. And they're actually now working with a mainstream brand, with Adidas, to create the lowest carbon sneaker out there that exists, right? So I think that there's some really exciting things happening. And again, just obviously on your package, you're not going to go into all the detail, but you need to have a QR code or something else that takes them back. Anybody who cares enough to understand that there's rigor behind it.
Yeah. So I love this conversation around labeling. I'd love to bring up another topic, particularly in light of the economic moment that we seem to be in and what we're entering in terms of a possible recession. Some people say we're already in a recession. So let's talk about cost. And one of the findings from our study that frankly could be read all sorts of ways is this split among consumers on paying more for climate-friendly products or not. So about a quarter are willing to pay more than 10% for climate-friendly products, and about a quarter are willing to pay no extra at all, not a penny more, and then everyone else is in between. Can you give your perspective on this finding?
So I have a more positive take on it than you do. For me, 75% of Americans are saying they're willing to pay more for climate-friendly products. That is awesome. I mean, of course, 25% of people who don't, 25% of people don't want to pay more for anything, right? Never mind climate-friendly products. So to me, that's your group of people who are, you know, and in some cases, they may be people who really can't afford to pay anything more, right? So to be fair, I don't want to, you know, but 75% saying yes. So then I'll go to our research of actual purchasing of sustainably marketed products, right? Versus surveys, not surveys, this is actual purchasing. Sustainably marketed products in CPG are growing 3 times faster than conventionally marketed products at a 28% premium on average. Okay. And so we're looking at this across 36 of 40 CPG categories. And across all those categories, the premium obviously varies from 150% for some categories, premium 150%, to some that are discounted. But very few that are discounted. And when they are, there's a reason. Like, for example, in like face care, you know, creams and stuff, the conventional is all chemical and it's much more expensive. So you have like this delta that's crazy. But most of them are clustering around 35% premium. And when we also looked at price sensitivity, and people are far more willing to take, for most of the CPG categories, they're willing to take pretty significant price increases for everything from diapers to coffee, if it's sustainable, right? So, and sorry, one other point I'll make is we looked at all of the demographics, right? So we looked at age, we looked at income, education, and rural, urban, and suburban. And as you might expect, millennials, upper income, college graduate, and urban out over index, right? But what is super interesting is that for categories that are widely accessible, like 70% of all yogurt has some type of sustainable claim on it, although they're all being sold at a 50% premium, not all of them, but I mean, on average, a 50% premium. 60% of all milk has some type of sustainable attribute at a 15% premium. For those two categories that are very easily available, all demographics are buying them, whether they're less than high school education, low income, retirees, et cetera. So we're beginning to do more research around availability, because I think what is really happening here is this is actually not a left post, left, white, you know, this is not in upper income. This is actually everybody. If you make it accessible and you make it price, you know, not necessarily price parity, but not like 150% premium, we will see more and more uptake and also loyalty to brands. And this is another big challenge for brands today, is that they have socialized, it's their fault. They have socialized, and marketers' fault too. You have socialized us into shopping almost exclusively based on price. When you look at how things were 40, 50 years ago, you shopped based on durability, artisanship, and price, but it wasn't the only thing. You were basically shopping based on value that had all these different things, including price in it. And now we've been kind of like price. And that has caused all these brands to kind of like collapse into each other. And sustainability can give you that competitive advantage to differentiate yourself.
That is really encouraging and a very inspiring message. I'd love to kind of pivot and finish in the classroom. I always find there are fascinating lessons from students when I get to speak to an academic and a professor like yourself. I always feel like I learned something incredible by asking a question like the following, which is, what are you learning from your undergraduates in this space? And I'm kind of hoping that maybe this will send us off on the episode with yet another kind of optimistic, hopeful ending as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm seeing, first of all, more and more undergraduates really convinced that this is an area that they need to focus on in their, and these are business school students that I'm teaching, right? These are not liberal arts students. They believe that this is not an either or. This is not a nice to have. This is a must have in terms of how business conducts its business, and that they want to find companies that are going to align with their values. And they feel very strongly about it. Includes social as well as environmental. You know, the diversity, equity, inclusion is a top priority for them, but they also understand that things like climate justice actually overlap with those sets of issues. And they also understand that climate has direct, immediate, and then, you know, 5 to 10 year significant implications for them and their lives and their future kids' lives, right? So I think strong focus, an interest in learning how they can innovate and be part of the solution, sometimes overwhelm and depression. You know, it's a really tough time to be growing up. it's not only climate or, you know, or Black Lives Matter, which are huge, but it's, you know, the pandemic and it's polarization and, you know, it's a lot, you know, so I see the anxiety level in my undergrads is really high and has been for the last couple of years. But this is also, I think, a way to channel that anxiety to help feel constructive and that you're doing something about things that are really are, you know, hugely challenging, but also create major opportunities for these students and for all of us.
Well, you spent a whole career constructively channeling what could be anxiety into some really positive results for business and society. And we really appreciate your work. We appreciate you being with us today and sharing your insights and expertise. And to our listeners, thank you for listening to The Trustmakers.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.